Hello and welcome back to the Goodness Lover Show. Today we're joined by naturopathic Dr. Jen Stagg, who's here to talk to us all about bitters, which are nature's underrated powerhouses. You're going to find out about how these little compounds are actually so important and powerful for our digestion, weight metabolism, blood sugar regulation, and so much more. Let's get into it. Okay, we are very excited to have naturopathic Dr. Jennifer Stagg or Jen Stagg here with us today to talk all about bitters. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about bitters.
So when it comes to bitters, I suppose maybe most of us are aware of their use in cocktails maybe, or just that it's a slightly unpleasant taste. But as a teaser, I guess, before we dive into it, everyone know bitters are amazing and we're about to actually understand why. So thanks for unpacking it all for us today, Dr. Jen. And so before we get into that though, I'd love to hear a bit about you. How did you get into natural health and what really got you excited about bitters to begin with?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been practicing as a naturopathic physician since 2003, so quite some time now. But, you know, my education leading up to that point was all in biochemistry. And I actually was in a PhD program in biochemistry. And I, you know, at that time, I decided to switch gears and go into clinical medicine because I just didn't see myself working in a lab for the rest of my life. But, you know, with that background, I did, you know, a lot of research on phytochemicals, you know, small components in food. My focus was nutritional biochemistry. So that always kind of like, you know, there was that surface or deeper understanding of the biochemistry of food. So then as a naturopathic physician, of course, you know, foundation of naturopathic medicine is food and nutrition. And we, you know, we get a very deep knowledge and understanding of working with patients with nutrition. As I got into clinical practice, then I started doing a lot of work with genetics and epigenetics, doing a lot of genomic testing. And I wrote my first book about genomic testing and epigenetics. And that kind of led me further into, you know, like, you know, I touched on phytochemicals there, but I didn't really talk about bitters per se. But, you know, kind of within that kind of, you know, whole area, essentially, I was finding that there was a way to better understand the really powerful chemicals in food and how they interact with our body. And they kind of all, you know, these powerhouses fall into this category of nutritional bitters. So there's this, you know, the bitters are phytochemicals. Certain phytochemicals obviously aren't bitter, but if something tastes bitter, it obviously is packed with phytochemicals. But interestingly, a lot of bitter components in food don't actually taste bitter, but they can bind the bitter taste receptors. So really, it was kind of like out of epigenetics. Then I kind of like went further into food, because people were then asking me, well, what exactly should I eat, right? And people were having a lot of digestive problems, and I treated a lot of that and seeing a lot of digestive abnormalities and, you know, just poor digestion responding well to a lot of herbs that we use are bitter components. So it kind of all kind of flowed from there, and I was able to come up with, you know, a more, I don't know, specific system to help people get, you know, improved health through nutrition, focusing on bitters. That's awesome. A really long answer, but that's how I came to write this book and help people better understand it. Cause there's not really, like, I don't think I came across a book that's written for the lay public on bitters per se. Like there's a couple of cookbooks that are about bitters and cooking, which are fantastic. But not a lot of, you know, health and wellness books focusing on bitters.
That's right. I have a copy of the bitter prescription here in my hand. digital version. So I was saying before the call to Dr. Jen that I was reading all the subheadings going, oh, that sounds interesting. Oh, that sounds interesting. Like bitters connects to this, bitters connects to this. This is how it works. And so we'll get through as much of it that we can today. So, but for those that are wondering, the book is called The Bitter Prescription and you can get it online.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold, basically. And so, yes, there's paper copies available and then obviously digital, of course, available.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. So bitters, they are phytochemicals, or but tell us a little bit more about them. Where can we find them? And what is our historical relationship with bitters as humanity?
Yeah. So bitters, when we think about bitters, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of people really only have maybe if they have heard about them, they're often like a cocktail ingredient. And those compounds, it's kind of interesting. The like bitter tonics were used historically as kind of like an aperitif or a digestive to enhance the digestion of like a heavier meal. So people would either and it was kind of like the upper class would use these as part of their, you know, like series of events preceding or post meal to improve the digestive process. And they do, like, it does taste bitter. Those bitters have that bitter component to it. So it is binding these receptors. So we have those on our tongue. And so obviously everyone's heard of like bitter taste, anything, you know, certain foods taste more bitter than others, and they're binding a bitter taste receptor on your tongue. Interestingly, now we know that there are bitter receptors all throughout our digestive tract. So this is also binding further down in the intestines. But now we know that there are bitter receptors even, you know, in our brains, in our, you know, in heart tissue. They're really all over the body. And this is why there's a lot of research now looking at bitters in other relation to other aspects of health, like brain health and cardiovascular health. And, you know, a lot of data on what bitter compounds can do to improve other health aspects. But if we go further back, like bitter was associated as a taste, you know, evolutionarily, as like if something was very bitter, this might be a food that also has poisonous compounds in it that we should maybe avoid eating too much of that food, that was really concentrated. So that's kind of like that evolutionary perspective to kind of like limit your bitters because it would have other compounds in there. So there was a protective component to it as well.
Interesting. Mm. I love this biochemistry background with going to this bitters angle. I think it's really interesting. So I'm curious as to when you started this journey, was it a particular study or is it really you're seeing it in clinical practice that you're starting to see that, you know, bitters are actually really powerful phytochemicals?
Yeah. So, I mean, historically, naturopathic doctors using, you know, the tradition of herbalists using bitters in practice, so bitter tinctures to improve digestion, those have been around, you know, for hundreds of years. So there was always that clinical aspect that I knew how to use bitters in that way. And, you know, learning about these plants when I was, you know, back in naturopathic medical school, the use of bitter melon, for example, to improve glucose regulation. So then there were also these known other aspects about bitters, but not a ton of information. We mostly thought about it as like for someone who kind of had like, you know, trouble digesting, that you would give them bitters before a meal. Or we would use like bitter melon to help a diabetic or a pre-diabetic. But as I started doing a lot of the genomics work, there are genetic variants with our taste receptors for people who have like more of a taste for bitter and more sensitive to bitter. And that kind of then led me into like, oh, well, you know, I kind of, you know, kind of came full circle thinking about, well, I should look at these bitters a lot more because now we have genetics popping up and it's being studied a lot more of bitter taste receptors and the differences between people, you know, who are more prone to obesity and their taste for bitter. So that's kind of where I really started doing a deeper dive and looking at the new research on bitters. And that led to kind of where I went clinically with the use of bitters.
Interesting. And I think you mentioned something on the, we were talking before the call and you said that unfortunately bitters are actually sort of getting you know, bred out of our food systems. Could you explain that a bit more?
Yeah. So over the last 100 years, our food supply, as you know, most of us know, has changed so much. And, you know, with this commercial production of food, it is geared towards having people having, you know, this preference. So for sweet, essentially. And so the sweeter components of food have been selected for, and the bitter components are being like deselected, basically. So now, for example, a tomato that you would buy, conventional tomato at the grocery store, tastes sweeter than it ever has. If you were to eat like an heirloom variety tomato, it would taste bitter, but more complex. And so that can be off-putting to people. So because, you know, our society is being, you know, exposed to so much produce that has more of a sweet taste to it, we're getting less of these bitter compounds, of course, because there's less of those in the food, but also our preferences have changed. So this is why, you know, like kids can have problems with eating enough vegetables because they're not exposed to those compounds. Now, if you eat organic foods and you eat non-genetically modified foods, then obviously you're not going to see these same changes, but conventional produce definitely has less of those bitters in food. And there's, you know, there's some evidence leading us to think, well, maybe this is part of the reason why there are increased rates of obesity and diabetes, even because of, you know, the quality of our food supply. So you could be eating what we would qualify as a healthy diet with plenty of vegetables, but if they're all conventionally grown, you know, like, you know, there's differences between exact, you know, types of produce, but if you're eating all conventional food, you know, it does affect the quality of the foods. You're getting less of that those bitters in your food.
Mm. Yeah, I was reading a study this week on soybeans and comparing GMO to conventional to organic. And it was basically that in a hierarchy as far as their nutritional composition went. So the more organic, the more vitamins and minerals, but actually the GMO had more fiber, which is interesting. So it seems like in their breeding over time, they've decided that fiber was to stay. And I guess that maybe it has something to do with the size of them or something like that. But it's interesting, right, to see that in the literature as well. Just it's a real thing. These important foods are getting bred out, and I guess bitter is not favorable to the palate. And so that's what they've decided is important, which is really sad. But to get into more about what these bitters do, you mentioned before that they're great for digestion, but what specifically is it about bitters that can really improve that?
Yeah, so a lot of people will, as they age and even with poor health status, can have, so they do a lot of different things. But first I'll talk about the effect that bitters have on acid production in the stomach. So as people get older and people who are in poorer health, even at younger ages, a lot of them can have low stomach acid, so hypochlorhydria. And certainly, you know, we hear a lot about hyper production, too much acid. And the amount of antacid medications that are taken around the world is astronomical. But a lot of, in many cases, people can have low stomach acid, and bitters can increase acid levels in the stomach. So obviously, if you really were an over, like producing too much acid, then you wouldn't want to be using these really potent bitters. Or if you had an ulcer or gastritis, like bitters, that's not the way you would go. Like an herbalist wouldn't give you bitters if you had an ulcer in your stomach. But it does increase the amount of stomach acid, and we need adequate amounts of stomach acid to activate our digestive enzymes. So we need it to actually break down food in the stomach, but then also to activate those digestive enzymes that are produced in the intestinal tract. So in many cases, people who are experiencing like bloating or sluggish digestion, when you take bitters prior to a meal, it's kind of like priming your digestion to start increasing stomach acid. And that could be, you know, when I mentioned herbal tinctures, sometimes a lot of people use apple cider vinegar And that is a bitter also. And that can stimulate kind of like the digestive juices, get them flowing, kind of increasing acidity.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's really helpful. Thank you. And so in your book, you open the book talking about aging. What is it about bitters that can really help us out with that process?
Yeah. So as we age, our digestive function starts to get sluggish. And so, as I mentioned, a lot of people, as they get older, are more likely to have low stomach acid, which is why over 50, but even younger now, but historically, even a lot of the studies were done looking at groups of people who are over 50 and what their risk was of nutrient deficiency. So there's, you know, you can go online and look up like, you know, the top nutrient deficiencies over 50, and you're going to find things like B12 and iron and, you know, a host of different deficiencies. And this is a byproduct of like poor digestion. So things are not getting broken down properly, and then malabsorption as well. So we're just not, even though as you get older, you know, you can be eating healthy, but you might not be getting all the nutrition out of your food. And this is where like bitters can also come in really handy to help improve the amount of nutrients you're absorbing from the food. And those bitter receptors getting bound does have an impact on other aspects of aging. So things like cardiovascular health, but also just like DNA, you know, expression. So this like whole like concept of epigenetics, that DNA expression is also affected favorably by consuming bitter compounds in food.
Interesting. This is fascinating. Mm. So who thought bitters would be so fascinating? So someone might be listening to this and thinking, oh, okay, I'll get these into me. But where? Because
where are they?
Because they're all GMO'd and So where do you start with a patient that comes in and says, okay, bitter me up, doctor.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So we think about, first of all, like trying to encourage patients to eat more foods that are organic and that are, you know, non-GMO, or if they, you know, can grow some of their own food. But things like herbs and spices and herbal teas, like those are really concentrated sources of bitters. So I'm always encouraging people to experiment with fresh herbs and using like spices on their food, because they are so potent and concentrated in these bitter compounds. So that's like one easy way to approach it. And I also encourage, you know, drinking bitters in beverages too. So coffee does contain bitters.
Yes. I was waiting for it. I was like, justify my addiction.
This is
please.
All we needed from this entire podcast. Yeah. Just tell us to drink more coffee.
All right. Head over to their website. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us today. Bye.
So yeah, so coffee, tea is a great source of bitter. So we know like tea is this excellent source of polyphenols. Those polyphenols are like taste bitter, and they do bind these bitter taste receptors. So I'm often encouraging people to, you know, kind of drink throughout the day some of these concentrated, like what we could call bitter tonics. So it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, concentrated pills of herbs that you're taking as a bitter, or tinctures that you're taking as bitters, although we do use those for people who are having serious problems with their digestion. If you're just trying to improve, you know, your overall health and looking for some ways to, you know, just use nutrition, you can get a lot of that out of herbs and spices and beverages. And then of course, then some foods are more packed with bitters than others. So that's when we're thinking about like the green leafy vegetables, arugula. Like I love, suggesting arugula to people who are not eating it. When they start eating, they're like, oh my God, I love this arugula.
Which is rocket for down under peeps.
I was just like, what is this, like exotic herb?
Exotic food. It's rocket, mate.
Is it made in the Himalayas?
I was wondering if you knew.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah, because yeah, I remember watching that years ago. Who is it? It's a British chef, Jamie Oliver. And he would all like, he could make rocket salad. And I remember going like, what is that? Like initially, but yeah. But you could start like starting off your meal. So say like, you know, a great meal is having obviously like arugula as the base of your salad, and you can put protein or legumes or whatever you want on there. Dress it with a little bit of olive oil, lemon, like even, you know, even olive oil has some bitter components to it. But starting your meal with a salad, like in a, like a little bit of arugula salad, like that's a way to kind of stimulate your digestion as well.
I was wondering, so you've obviously seen this a lot in clinical practice as well. Like, do you have any specific patient stories where they were like, you know, they saw the light with bitters and they were like, wow, and it made a difference to whatever they were facing?
Yeah. And so I would say I use a lot, I suggest bitters a lot for patients who are coming in about like weight loss and weight loss resistance. So to help reduce their cravings for sweets. So a lot of times this is kind of like that sticking point where people are like, I'm literally addicted to sugar. How am I going to get over this more easily? And so I'll often have patients introducing way more bitters into their diet, because over time, like even though your taste buds and palate may not be adapted to bitters because you're so used to eating sweet, the more you get those signals, those bitter signals, it does actually change your appetite. So that's another really great benefit of bitters. Your taste buds actually do change over time. Meaning like the when you eat more bitters over time, the proteins in your saliva will change. The bitter doesn't taste as bitter to you anymore. So you actually get adapted to it, which is why even like with kids where, you know, you're introducing foods and saying like it could take up to 10 times introducing these foods before they kind of start to get a taste for it. That's another approach that we use with kids is, you know, maybe it's really hard, you know, to just take away all their favorite like weedy snacks. So a lot of times we split them, right? So you can have half a portion of those like goldfish, and then you're going to have like some vegetables first before you're allowed to have that. So over time you can start like switching them and their, you know, their brain signaling and their taste buds over time to get adapted to that. But it tends to work really well for people who are, you know, really, you know, having a big problem with sugar addiction and carbohydrate craving. And then that can help them to be much more, you know, effective in their weight loss efforts.
What is, this whole weight loss resistance, asking for a friend, i.e. myself, like, I'm just curious if it's with the, what is it about bitters with weight loss resistance?
Yeah, so it has a wide, like a number of different levels, I guess, is the way it can affect you. So first of all, it can, you know, reduce your sugar cravings, can change your appetite. So then you're going to be able to like eat less. But then it also improves things like insulin sensitivity, blood sugar control. It also has effects on some of the fat burning hormones. So things like adiponectin and leptin. Hormones like ghrelin. So when we think about digestive hormones, cholecystokinin, bitters affect all of those basically. So now you're getting, you know, improved fat metabolism as well by incorporating more bitters into your diet.
Sounds good. So how is it that, I don't know if you can talk about the specifics, but in terms of blood sugar regulation, what is it that bitters are actually doing?
Yeah. So there's now a lot of studies on this so far. You know, there's a growing body of research on it, but it seems to affect just how insulin receptors are expressed as well. So, you know, on the cell and how well then, you know, glucose is binding to insulin is binding to those insulin receptors. And so we think bitters are having more of an effect from like a DNA expression sort of pathway. So like how those proteins actually get expressed, it gets tricky and complex to understand those pathways. So I think, you know, some of that is still being worked out, but it does seem to be more from an protein expression pathway.
Interesting. I remember hanging out with Robbie from Mastering Diabetes, who he has type 1 diabetes. He wrote the best-selling book, Mastering Diabetes, with Cyrus Kambada. But when we were hanging out, he was eating this massive tray of arugula or rocket, and he was just eating it by the mouthful like this. Yeah. I don't know if he was doing it because he had the awareness of all these mechanisms, or just intuitively he knew his body needed it, but he was eating it by the mouthful. It was one of the most bizarre things. But it's so interesting. So DNA, you mentioned DNA just then, and you piqued my interest, and I know that you have a whole book on DNA, epigenetics kind of stuff. So what is it about bitters and DNA? Can you take us a little bit deeper with that sort of thing?
Yeah. So bitters as a category are, you know, they are phytochemicals. And so we know that phytochemicals like chocolate, for example, is a great example. Those cocoa polyphenols, the flavonoids in chocolate, have been shown to affect methylation patterns in DNA. So there's a, you know, great Spanish group of researchers that have done some really neat research there, where they look at DNA expression and these, like, being able to do what's called a global methylation analysis. So they look at white blood cells and, you know, expose them to specific flavonoids, these polyphenols, which are bitter. So chocolate's another good one too. And we haven't even talked about wine yet, or beer, because they both have bitters.
I'm sort of like pinching myself. I'm like, chocolate, but wine, and coffee. I'm like, and you're recommending it to me. I'm like, wake up, Matt, wake up. Is this real?
It is. It is. Now, in moderation, of course.
Aww.
But that chocolate example, that's true of other things like curcumin, for example, and turmeric, that also affects the methylation pattern. And if, you know, if anyone's ever tasted turmeric, like just like straight up turmeric, it's pretty bitter, which is why, you know, most people, when they take turmeric or curcumin, they're taking it in a capsule form. But all of it essentially comes down to methylation patterns, and then that's how DNA expression is affected.
Interesting. So obviously, just for someone that doesn't understand what methylation is, can you just summarize that briefly and why that would be important?
Yeah. So I guess, like a lot of people, maybe the only time they've come across methylation is, you know, more so you might've heard these terms about like, folic acid, like MTHFR and methylation and, that sort of process. But when we're thinking about methylation, it's coming from a standpoint of like how a gene gets expressed. And so it basically is just like a chemical tag that turns a gene on or off, is how we think about it. And so for some genes, it's good to turn it on. And for some, it's like we want to turn them off. So like a tumor suppressor gene, which is a gene for, something that would like basically kill cancer cells, like naturally in your body, like your body's immune system has the capability to patrol for like rogue cancer cells and like kill them. And so the gene, these tumor suppressor genes, we would want to turn those on instead of turning them off. And so phytochemicals, even the compounds like in green tea, for example, those have been shown to turn on a tumor suppressor gene by affecting, like putting a chemical tag on it. Typically it's methylation, but sometimes it's, you know, more complex terms. I'll throw a couple around, like histone modification, acetylation, but the majority of it we see is that process of methylation, which is just like a little like chemical tag. It's a methylation group that gets added. So really, like when you hear methylation or epigenetics, it comes down to turning genes on or off. Another great example would be in diabetes. So people who are prone to diabetes, like type 2 diabetes, the adult onset diabetes, they're, you know, we can now know that you can turn those genes on or off bought through lifestyle. So eating a Mediterranean diet, which is rich in these phytochemicals, has been shown to turn off a bunch of the genes that are associated with developing type 2 diabetes. And, you know, we could go on and on with that list. Alzheimer's, like a lot of these chronic diseases are affected through lifestyle modification through that whole pathway of epigenetic or DNA expression.
Awesome. So yeah, rewinding. So obviously bitters help with methylation, and methylation has this, obviously it's its own podcast, yeah. 10 podcasts at least. Yep. But it's, you know, has all these cascading impacts on gene expression and many of our lifestyle diseases. So that's really cool. That's a really cool. Yeah. Thanks for taking us down that journey.
Interesting. Yeah. So us here at Goodness Lover, we're a little bit obsessed.
As in us or our community or?
All of us.
All of us.
All of us are Goodness Lover. We're a little obsessed with the microbiome. Could you tell us a little bit about the connection between bitters and our little bugs?
Yeah. So there's, you know, starting to see some more studies on bitters and the microbiome. There aren't a ton yet. But there are some, and bitters increase the diversity of our microbiome. So we now know that's probably one of the most important hallmarks of a healthy microbiome is to have a lot of different types of these commensal bacteria. So you want to have like a lot of variety, right? And the way to achieve that is through having also a lot of variety in the foods that you eat. And that's because you're going to be exposed to many different types of phytochemicals. So it helps the microbiome in that way. And it also then promotes some of these like classes of bacteria, like bacterioidetes. A beneficial like group of bacteria is enhanced when you're eating more bitters in your diet.
Which also have an influence on our weight and metabolism, right? So more reasons that bitters impact us.
And you're right. So like that microbiome, back when we were talking about like weight loss resistance, talking about digestion and genetic expression and insulin, then there's, you know, the microbiome, which then is like, you know, a huge, huge impact on weight and metabolism, and bitters affect that as well. So it is like these bitters are working on a lot of different levels. Mm-hmm.
So forgive me for like my just basic understanding of bitters, but from what I've understood as well, and definitely fact check me on this, is just in the sense that bitters, once they go into the body, there's something like they're quite good for the liver from what I've heard. Is that correct? Because of how the body's interpreting some what these bitters are, and it's sort of like the micro stress response that our body has towards these bitters. Is that true?
Yeah, I would say there's a component of that. There's not a lot of research, I would say, that I'm aware of yet on bitters and that pathway, but that historically that's how we've thought about bitters and the liver. You're right about that.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So basically, like similar to many other like of these polyphenols, it's just the way that our body is reacting to these things. And we're basically getting nature's ability to, you know, a lot of these things that are created in plants are created out of stress, correct? Would you say that about bitters? And so
I would say absolutely. And so this is why things that are, you know, like weeds and herbs, like are, you know, herbs basically that are weeds and grow in a really stressed environment. And this is why we're growing something organically is naturally stressed. And it has more concentrated phytochemicals as a result of that. So more phytochemicals are going to be result in more like of these would equate to more of those bitter compounds. So, you know, we always think about like that stressed environment for a plant is actually good for us. That like the more a plant is stressed, the more it's going to output these chemicals that will protect the plant and allow it to thrive.
Because they're, it's its own like defense mechanism, right? So against like pests and I guess it's to make the plant less favorable for people, for predators to eat it. Yeah, super interesting how that little plant's distress is our benefit.
It's huge.
Conventional farming, if you think about it, it's like throwing a bunch of fertilizer so it can thrive and throwing a bunch of like controlling for pests. And so then the plant doesn't need to do anything. So then it doesn't output all of these phytochemicals that, you know, are good for us. Yeah. Like that, of course, that plant then survives and thrives to a point until it's harvested. but that's essentially what's happening, right? That's why an organically grown plant, you know, certainly can be nurtured and loved with, you know, organic, you know, like fertilizer, but it's not the same sort of situation as it is experiencing from the standpoint of, you know, conventional farming.
Well, what is the connection to our immune system?
Yeah, so bitters definitely impact the immune system. So we know that there are a number of studies on bitters and improved immune function. A lot of the bitter components also have, you know, antimicrobial activity. And so there are, you know, of course, studies that antiviral effects of different components in, especially in herbs. So like the bitter components and things like oregano oil or garlic, like, you know, there's tons of data on what those types of compounds can do for immune function, that it can not only, you know, act as a direct antimicrobial. So most of those herbs have this like ability to, you know, neutralize virus or neutralize bacteria. But it also has the effect of enhancing our immune function so that, you know, we can better fight infection as well.
Interesting. So would it be correct to say, so all bitters are phytochemicals, but not all phytochemicals are bitter. Is that correct? Okay, cool. So when we're looking to increase these in our diet, I think for anyone listening, they might have been writing down, oh, this was mentioned, this was like, got the coffee, Rigolo was mentioned, chocolate wine.
That's my list. Sorry.
So if I was to count down like 10 seconds on my hands, could you mention as many like polyphenol, like phytochemical rich bitters that come to mind?
Yeah. So I did mention like green vegetables, like the leafy greens, garlic, onions, I said herbs and spices. If we go into the fruit category, I would say berries are really concentrated. Beans and legumes have bitters in there as well. So like black beans are a great source. Mushrooms, so fungus, have bitters. So that's one that people never think of in terms of bitters, and there's bitters in there. There are bitters in soy. There are bitters, you know, in moldy cheese. So even like the mold in cheese has bitter qualities in there as well, like can bind the bitter receptors. Sea vegetables, so things like dulse and, you know, seaweed have bitters too.
Wow. That's good, so list. Cool. So if someone, I guess, listening to this, and they're like, okay, I'm grabbing this book and I'm running out of the hills. I'm going to be a hunter gatherer and get these these things into me. So obviously they're not going to do that. And so you would just say, in terms of the practical output now of where to find some of these foods, where, you know, obviously we're not just going to get it from the general supermarket. Do you recommend getting it from
maybe you could get it from the general supermarket.
Oh, if it's like, but I'm thinking more like, you know, in a practical sense, do you tell your patients to go to farmers markets to try and find it? Because we know it, organic can even have depleted soil in it. And so, yeah, what is your general suggestion on that with your patients?
Right. So, yes, like a farmer's market is fantastic. So if you're going to a farmer's market, you're getting produce that's, you know, harvested that day or the day before. And heirloom varieties are fantastic whenever you can find those. The other thing I would say is like, having a small garden where you grow herbs, or even inside, like in the winter, growing some fresh herbs so that you can put fresh herbs on food. And as I mentioned, like spices even. So you can, you know, get good quality spices, keep them fresh, you know, don't have spices in your cupboard that are like 8 years old. buy new spices because they're going to be more effective. But those are ways also that you will enhance the amount of bitters in your diet. But yeah, I agree. Like, you know, of course, not everybody has access to farmers markets, and they can still get good quality you know, like they can still have access to things through grocery stores, you know, if you're a smart shopper, I would say, right? Yeah. Like to try to buy more. So you could buy like frozen wild blueberries, for example, like, you know, in the United States, like a lot of people shop at Trader Joe's. You buy what you can get wild blueberries there. Like that's an excellent bitter source.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's, as you mentioned before, you can just go to Trader Joe's and get a bunch of stuff. American stores are really quite expansive, probably a bit more than we have here in Australia. But I think it's important that people just do something rather than get too idealistic with this stuff. Like obviously, yes, of course, organic at the farmer's market is like, or growing it in your own garden organically is even better. But I think it's important that people don't get so idealistic that they don't do anything at all. So,
exactly. And so it might be for some people, it's like, okay, like start drinking some green tea. Like that's going to give you some bitters, like have kind of time your meal so that you're having like some warm lemon water, like before a meal. And that's going to enhance your exposure. Eating like mixed greens instead of just like, you know, different types of lettuces that you would choose. If you were to choose like the variety, you know, the herb kind of mix of mixed greens for lettuce, or swapping out to arugula over like romaine lettuce, you know, like all of those things can add up.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, this has certainly been a favorite podcast for me because of the list you've given me. It's like my, no, it's been awesome and we really enjoyed it. And I'd just love to, could you just explain where people can get access to this book? We think it's such a great book and obviously something that's so important for today's health and what we're going through as humanity in general.
Yeah, yeah. So my book is available on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble. You can get it, you know, on your iPhone and download it in your iBooks or your Kindle. You can get it pretty much anywhere books are sold.
Awesome. Great. And do you have a clinic or practice that you still work out of?
Yeah, yeah. So I still maintain a clinical practice and it's my husband and I. He's a chiropractor, an acupuncturist. And then we also have a couple of other naturopathic physicians on our team and where our practice is accepting new patients here in Connecticut.
Oh, so do you do virtual as well?
We do. So yeah, I mean, that's been a great aspect of the pandemic. That's the one, I would say one good thing that's come out of it is even like for many patients now, they have, you know, insurance coverage for virtual healthcare now. And here in Connecticut, it's been mandated for the next 2 years, which is awesome because it like opens up the amount of access people have to medical care. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. We're very excited to get more bitters on our plate. And now that we've learned about all the magical properties that they have. So thank you so much for enlightening us today. And we've really enjoyed this podcast. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It was my pleasure. It was a great conversation.
Well, my list is ready. Of bitters.
I could just imagine your like best-selling book, the Matt Putz Bitter Diet.
Yep.
Just drink coffee and wine.
How this eat like chocolate. Himalayan compound. How do you sound like the American version?
What is it? Arugula.
Yeah, it just like sounds so weird to me.
It sounded anyway, so majestic.
It sounded so majestic. I was like, I need that. But I have it all the time. Yeah, and my three-item list. But of course, it was such a good interview and so many things that bitters do that we hope that you've been enlightened on. So what did you get out of the talk? We'd love to hear from you in the comments and even some bitter suggestions how we can incorporate bitters into our daily life.
What's your favorite?
Yeah.
Let us know.
And are you like me? You're a little bit excited about the news. Maybe you're just like, Matt, come on. She said moderation. Don't get too excited. But seriously, yeah, I'd love to hear from you. Smash that like button. That really helps get this message out to those that need to hear it. And if you want to be an excellent goodness lover student, hit the notification bell and subscribe at the same time. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for joining us.